From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Broadcasting live, weekday mornings, this is listener-supported One Radio Network.
Andrew Goss, part number two, come on in and join us. The phone's here if you'd like to call. 888-663-6386, email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Andrew Goss, you said it very often a year ago that if Hillary Clinton wins the presidency, it's going to really be a mess. And if Donald Trump wins the presidency, it's going to really be a mess. And boy, he's got his hands full, Mr. Trump. And it's a good thing he's got thin skin, because things are just popping all over the world. And then, you know, the other side of it, then he's got embattled with this whole Russian thing, and he keeps fighting with the media. And it's just, poor guy. I don't know how he's going to make it, 4 years. I hope he's taking care of himself, taking his sulfur. Man, he's got his hands full for sure, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Oh, I really do. You know, now, because the whole Mideast thing is just, it's even getting stranger as you go. You know, here it is this morning. Iran blames Saudi Arabia for terrorist attacks, supporting ISIS, vows of revenge. You know, and then now South Korea said this morning, you know, we don't want you to put those anti-North Korean missiles on our land. Isn't that interesting? Why they would do that? I thought we were buddies with these. South Korea suspends deployment of U.S. anti-missile system. Mm-hmm. I wonder what that's about.
Yeah. What is it about, the influence of China?
Yeah. And, well, yeah, you know, that's what it says right here. How'd you know that?
Well, yeah. I've been to Korea, and, you know, the Korean nation over the last 30 years has given GDP growth that we would just kill for.
South Korea?
Yeah.
Really?
Man, that country has exploded. And their
ability make a lot of stuff, don't they?
Yeah, manufacture and export and so forth. And it's all because of American influence and the ability to import their goods into the United States with very little, if no, tax. But guess what we got in return?
What?
The right to do banking deals in South Korea.
Oh, you mean so you could probably go to a Chase in Seoul and there'll be a Chase bank on the corner, right?
Right. Yes. And
that's how, excuse me, let me interrupt, because that's how you've taught us how these free trade deals work, right? How NAFTA works, how all of these deals, like even the Paris Accord that Mr. Trump disapproved of, that the bankers kind of write the deals and the boys write the deals, and then they get in with their banking in exchange for whatever they're going to give you.
Correct.
Okay.
And, of course,
Pretty simple.
Yeah.
A quid pro quo.
Yeah, and we feel like, oh, wow, we, you know, made a great trade deal. Meanwhile, you know, Bank of America has their branch office there in Seoul. And you know, the one that I've talked about all the time that is really deep, the Bank of New York Mellon.
Yeah.
Right? You remember? Big, you don't hear about them too much.
Well, they're one of the big owners in the
Fed,
right?
Huge.
Yeah. Yeah, New York Fed.
That's Alexander Hamilton's bank, man.
Alex's bank.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for him.
That's charter number one. And then Citibank, of course, has their sole office, as does J.P. Morgan Chase and, you know, a bunch of other runner-ups. But, you know, the reality is that our presence in Seoul, Korea, our bank's presence in Seoul, Korea, is a relatively new phenomenon. And so then they get in there and do all the mischief that they do to make their money. And the people that are native start to resent it. And then this growing anti-American hatred starts to be...
And then that's when they start butting up with China.
They start throwing firebombs through the windows of Citibank, as they did in Argentina.
And then China's right there to say, well, we'll be your buds, right?
Yeah, sure.
We'll be your
but
friends.
Their influence, their Western influence, makes their banks even worse than the U.S. banks.
Sure.
So, but it's all about the banking power. The power, of course, Korea wants to have its own banking system and its own banks and its domestic...
good luck with that.
Well, yeah, good luck with that. Remember, that's what caused the Amero to be suggested by the Canadian banks, because their fear was that, hey, the American banks are taking all of this... the fruit of this NAFTA trade agreement.
Sure.
You know, sure, we get to export our pulp into the U.S. and so forth, but they're setting up branches right here in Canada. and they're going to start underwriting securities and taking deposits and so forth. So why don't we have a single currency that's good in all three countries, and we'll call it the Amero. Do you remember the Amero, Patrick?
I remember when, yeah.
And it was all the craze, man. Internet land was a buzz.
Oh, yeah.
The Amero is the new currency, and it's coming in September, and you should be ready.
Buy yours now.
Amero futures.
But see, I kind of thought, maybe I'm misinformed, is that since the Korean War, when we went over there, and I don't know what we did, but what did we do? What was that about? It was a police action because was North Korea really trying to take over South Korea?
Was China really trying to take over all of Korea? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
It was a Chinese thing.
It was a civil war between, you know, the westernized Koreans and the non-westernized Koreans.
Yeah, it was a civil war. So we went over there to back one of them, right?
Yeah, we picked the South. Yes, we did.
And then in exchange, and then we left, I don't know how many people are... Americans are still in Korea to this day.
Troops, yeah.
But you would think if we're the Americans are in the DMZ zone and South Korea's our buds, then so you saying that they're now just wondering about this relationship and whether or not we want to be friends anymore?
Well, if you look at Citibank by itself, right, before 1980, there was no Citibank in Korea. And then they came up with this Korean-American bank in the mid-80s, and then that was bought, I'm using my air quotes, by Citibank in 2004. So how new is this phenomenon? I mean, it's not like there was an open, overt Americanization of Korea until, like, this millennium, not last. It's a this century phenomenon, not last century phenomenon. The control in the past from, say, 52 to present or to the turn of the century was covert, not overt, not in your face. Here we are. We're Citibank. So the influence of the U.S. was well hidden until, you know, this century.
Well, if you think things are tough about free speech on the university campuses, and that's hilarious. It's not really, it's sad what's going on there, but let's not talk about that because it's so sad. But UAE, get this, threatens 15-year jail time if you publish any statements sympathetic to Qatar.
Yeah, right.
Wow. Man, they don't fool around over there. You know?
No, they have freedom of the press.
That's right. You want to put on a Facebook page?
American values. These are allies. These are our friends.
Jeez,
they're our friends.
Man,
yeah.
Man, that's hardcore.
Yeah. And incidentally, Korea has a record of ignoring consumer complaints until, you know, part of our modernized financial supervisory system. Citibank Korea, guess what it is? The worst bank in terms of consumer complaints. The worst bank. The absolute worst. More consumer complaints than any other bank in the country. And so their attitude towards their customers there is reflected in the service that they provide for them. And as a result, are Koreans resentful? Yes. Yes, as the American influence has gotten more covert and they see who the real masters are, yeah, they don't feel good about it.
Speaking about China, folks keep writing about Andrew Goss, about the liquidity crisis that China's going to be going through and is right now. And I don't understand that because, I don't know, maybe I didn't have my golden retriever hat on when you mentioned this because I still don't get it. Okay, how can you have a liquidity crisis when you own the central bank and you can be as liquid as you want whenever you want because you just print more you want? So got to explain that to me.
Because the more yuan you print, the less they're worth.
Well, yeah, but you still get our liquids. What do you care what they're worth?
Well, you better care what they're worth, huh? Especially after you fought this long to make it one of the basket. Yeah, there's that.
So you can only crunch so many, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. You'll spoil the game.
Okay.
So you have to try to find other ways to deal with your liquidity crisis. If as a central bank, you're responsible and you perform your function with some restraint, then you can maintain your overall game for a very long time.
Yeah, kind of like, right? Kind of like United States have done.
Yeah, the dollar.
Yeah, the dollar. They've done pretty good.
So,
well, I don't know about pretty good, but they've gone 100 years, so they're So then China, where they got into problems is they have up 1.5 billion people or six that need to work.
Yeah.
So they created yuan.
Yeah.
And they did all these stuff with the banks, and they created
and they used
stuff,
their power. Like, they used like their power to create
dig
money.
Dig that hole and then put fill that hole up.
Yes. Right. Build that city and then don't move anyone into it.
Yeah.
Build that road.
Do whatever
build
you
that
want.
Bridge. Build that whatever you want to do. You want to borrow money to do what? That's fine. We'll do that. You want to borrow money to expand this plant so that you can ship more goods so
sure,
that
baby.
We can bring in more dollars? Heck yeah, we're going to finance that. And so they did it to the tune. Well, let's just say they made us pale by comparison. The idea that that they would monetize or create so much debt that if they monetized it all, the value of the yuan would evaporate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So,
and believe it or not, I think they're starting to buy U.S. treasuries again. After going on this selling binge, there's some kind of deal that's been made because China's going to in the midst of their own liquidity crisis, they're going to create yuan and buy U.S. treasuries. And there's some sort of a sterilization deal, I'm certain, that's been put into place.
Oh,
I'm
by,
certain.
By transferring
the money that,
over from yuan to dollars.
Yeah, and the money that you give us, and we're going to use it to strengthen the yuan. I have no doubt.
Isn't it curious if you really pull back, big picture, get out there on a satellite view, that all of this war stuff, all of the war stuff, all of the issues, all of the problems in the world are all centered around money and the people who control the currency.
Yes.
That's what it's the deal. That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about.
That's
yes, if we were putting our left foot in and taking our left
doing
foot
the hokey
out.
Pokey.
Yeah. Yeah, that is it.
Whoever
yeah.
controls these yeah. currencies, they try to keep control of controlling the currency.
Yep.
And then they're, like you just said, and they keep doing the dance to not let it get too much inflation or too much deflation.
Correct.
And they're always
and so
on that
now,
razor's edge.
China being one of the partners, remember,
yeah.
to suggest that they're an enemy, you know, it's like that Appalachian mob table meeting where, you know, the head of the table, you got factions all around the table. We're all at the same table. And yeah, we're arguing across the table and we argue with each other. But, you know, when the word comes down, that's what's done. And so at a very time when the fear is that the Fed is going to raise interest rates, putting upward pressure on the cost of borrowing money, and China, of course, has been selling off their treasury debt. We talked about it, I don't know, three shows ago. I always said that if I ever saw that happening, I would bring it up. Well, I saw it happening. I brought it up. It had reduced its ownership right to the end of 2016, the most that it ever had. And it was taking the dollars that it got from cashing in the treasuries and buying yuan in an attempt to shore up the value of the yuan. And so now they're taking their newly created yuan and buying treasuries once again. So that's on the Fed's holdings of, foreign holdings. You'll go down and see it there on that H41 release. So that indicates to me, you know, given that they kept it in the custodial account of the New York Fed, that the Fed is then going to take the dollars that are effectively given to it by China in exchange for treasury debt, and they're going to buy and urge the purchase of yuan. So the support of the yuan is shifted not only from the Chinese Central Bank, but also to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
So we
get the dual benefit because they're buying treasuries. The rate today on the 10-year yield has got to be the lowest that it's been. It's got to be at a low, even though the U.S. dollar index is well below 98 now, isn't it? So if you'll check those two, I don't have them, but
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's the case. So U.S. Treasury yields fall, we get that benefit, and the yuan is strengthened in the open marketplace. They get that benefit.
The yuan. Yeah, U.S. dollar index today is 96.67.
Under 97. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, there you have it, weakening dollar. And, well, weakening to the extent that, believe it or not, even with the dollar under 97, the U.S. Treasury bond yield is probably, what, the lowest this year. So, classic ratchet.
Ratchet. So, with in our study of money over these 9 years, we kind of learned that the whole thing is
smoke.
Smoke and mirrors.
And mirrors.
And mirrors and smoke. So we have listeners around the world. What are some ideas that you can give to people of how do you not participate in the silliness of it all? You know, when we have to use dollars.
Well, you have 10 to 15% of your wealth can be devoted to playing with the silliness. But, you know, you should put the bulk of your wealth into physical tangibles to avoid all of the financial pitfalls that are associated with a fiduciary or fictitious monetary system. And it's a relatively new innovation. And so I'm sure that when they came out with paper money, you know, oh, what a great thing it was. It's paper. It's not so heavy. It won't tear your pockets. And you can store more of it and all the wonderful benefits of paper. And eventually we found out that there's no substance in fiduciary money. You rely on other people's trust and their good faith and their positive efforts, something all three of which are in short supply. So for me and for those who study the risks and pitfalls, physical money is the only thing that is exempt from all the nonsense that occurs with fiduciary money. There's just nothing else.
Now, you've been on this for many, many years on this whole...
Nearly 40.
Yeah, on this whole idea because you really understood how it worked and how you got into gold and silver coins. But is it fair to say that it served you well for yourself, for your family?
Oh, goodness,
by knowing what you know and,
oh, yeah.
and taking this tact, I guess.
Yeah, of just saving money in the form of real money.
Yeah, has it?
So when my first child was born and I put a $1,000 bucket of quarters, dimes, and halves aside as a dramatic emergency measure. And let me tell you, that was a hard-earned $2,800 that I buried into that thing. And I still have it, you know, all these years later. But if I were to just turn around and sell it at today's very low price, it would be worth maybe $13,000. If I would have sold it in 2011 when everyone was going silly nuts, let's see, what was it worth then? Wow, $35,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the $2,800 that I put into that bucket is still $2,800 no matter what I do. And no matter what would have happened, there's no chance that I would have lost that money unless somebody broke into the house and actually took it with them.
Right.
And then all through the years, I augmented and added and added and added. And I added when the price was up, and I added when the price was down, and I added when the price was in the middle. And I dollar averaged my way in over the last 40 years.
Wow.
So now what I have is mine. It's not subject to somebody else's whim. There's no counterparty risk that someone else owes me this, and maybe they can pay and maybe they can't. And it's a secure store of wealth that I know I could pass on to the next generation of Gosses. And they can build upon it, I hope. I've trained them well. They'll do the same thing.
Oh.
Add to the pile. And intergenerationally, the building up of wealth through this method is so well established. And if you broaden the category to hard assets, tangibles in general, you know, if you bought old guitars, old motorcycles, jewelry, art, antiques, whatever your
thing
is. You'd
be in the same position.
Yes, you probably would, although you wouldn't be as liquid. You know, it might be harder to
liquidate. Sure, it's easier to sell a coin than it is to sell your 48 Ford or whatever you have.
Right, or your, you
but you can sell them. It just takes a while.
Antique couch or your Tiffany lamp.
Just takes a while.
Yeah, your Basquiat painting.
Basquiat.
Yeah.
Well, so then you... What you've done, and other people can do it on the same, you know, obviously not on the level that you've been able to because you've been at it 40 years. But,
and I'm in the business.
And obviously you're right in the belly of the beast there where you get to, you know, have first crack at a lot of stuff. But so then what you did was you just figured out a way how to have enough dollars, these Federal Reserve notes, to do your life.
Yeah, well,
so you don't have to dig into that.
Right. For me, it was.
You don't have to dig into your stash.
I used to ask the question when a dime was 28 cents, when a silver dime was 28 cents, I would say to the people, look, if I could take you back to 1964, and right, this is 1985, so it wasn't that long ago. If I could take you back to 1964 and you can buy all the dimes at 10 cents, how many would you buy? And for me, the answer was all of them, right? I want all of them. Because I know that they're going to increase in value. But I can only work so hard and put away so much excess capital. I can only buy so many. So we hatched this plan of reaching out to individuals and saying, hey, why don't you put this stuff away and let me know where it is? That's my benefit. I place my inventory with a client in Omaha, and then 10 years later, 20 years later, I can call them back and say, hey, you remember that dime you bought for 28 cents? Well, it's $1.10. Do you want to sell? And so for me, it represents way more than I could ever buy on my own. It's an extended inventory resource. So if I can place $50 million worth of rare coins with individual investors, and that stuff is later worth $150 million, well, not only does everybody I put them with make money, but you bet I make money when I sell them again. So that is the
business model
that I put into place.
Clever,
in the early
80s, clever, yeah. Very clever.
As opposed to the just, here's an anonymous catalog ad, mm-hmm. buy these coins if you want them, mm-hmm. don't buy them if you don't want them,
right.
and I don't care what happens to you after you buy them. That's a little different,
yeah,
but
yeah,
typical
a little
of
different.
The, yeah.
That's what, pretty much what goes on out there, got, you know, I guess. Yeah. And then coin shops, well, coin shops are different, or that's just kind of a local thing. You might find stuff in there.
They buy a coin, they sell a coin, they walk back out, and we wait for them to walk back in again before anything happens.
They'll be back.
Or maybe they don't. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't. It's just not a very good method of keeping up with your customers.
Uh-huh. Here's an email. Eustace Mullins wrote a pamphlet available free online called The 5 Trillion Cold War Hoax.
Yeah.
I suggest everyone read it. It's short. It makes history so much easier to understand and neutralizes the effects of nonstop fear porn.
Mm-hmm.
Fidel Castro was a Hollywood actor. He has an IMBD page. He was introduced to the CFR by Rockefeller. It was installed into Cuba partially to control sugar. Is that true?
That's what they say, yes.
Well, according to Servando Gonzalez, and as appears to be obviously by the CIA photos of ships with nukes and the whole missile crisis was a hoax. Well, consider that to this day, we still have a military base on the island. We do, Guantanamo Bay. Mm-hmm. At the time, the Bay of Pigs, whatever, we had 10 to 20,000 troops stationed in Cuba in our base. Not only did Rockefeller's daughters vacation in Cuba regularly, they did so as Fidel's guests. Oh, really? Since 1968, Rockefeller has had a branch of Chase Bank in the Kremlin. He said, he goes on, the open sewer smell we've been experiencing lately completely disappears when the TV is off. Do you smell it too? My conclusion is that the media are the terrorists.
Well, Walter Cronkite was famously on the CIA payroll.
That's the way it is.
That's the way it is. And in our generation, I suppose it's Anderson Cooper who brags about his CIA training.
Does he now?
Yeah, does he now?
He's got the haircut for it now.
It has, yes, he does.
Got the boot camp haircut thing going.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I didn't know that whole thing about Cuba. Is it this fellow accurate, this emailer?
Well, this is the story that you can get out of the Eustace Mullins book. I would also recommend The Great Betrayal, The Abuse of the General Welfare Clause, as well as any other book by Eustace Mullins. Goodness, he was a prolific writer. The World Order is a very good one. Secrets of the Federal Reserve, though not as engaging as Griffin's book, is a great explanation of the activities of the Fed.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, Eustace's books, Murder by Injection, takes on the medical system and the cancer scam. You'd love that one.
Yeah, I need to read that one, boy.
Yeah, you do.
When did he write that?
Goodness. I mean, 78, 79, long time ago. I was just a wet-nosed kid when I met Eustace Mullins.
He was on it, wasn't he?
Oh, man, he was on it. I could sit and talk to him for hours. I just, and we just, you know, Well, anyway, greater minds I haven't found when it comes to the subject of American history. So anything you can get your hands on and read by Eustace Mullins? Again, The World Order, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, Murder by Injection, The Rape of Justice was the basis of my understanding of commercial law and admiralty law and contract law versus common law. You know, things that just aren't taught even to lawyers. I've talked to lawyers about it, and they, you know, they're puzzled because, yes, this is a piece that they were never shared, that, you know, the whole history of administrative law is something that lawyers don't learn about.
I interviewed Eustace Mullins many years ago, and, you know,
that was a rare privilege there.
This was in June in 2008. I have to check and see if that podcast.
Yeah, it might be. I shared the stage with him in Utah in the mid-90s, Weber State University in Utah. And, man, he's, you know, a mesmerizing speaker.
Yeah.
Contemporaneously stand there and just start at A and go all the way to Z without a single note. Just a brilliant man, and we're sadder and less for his passing, that's for sure.
Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, it is The Real World of Money. Please join us. Don't be shy. Patrick at oneradionetwork.com is my email address. Got an email from a friend of mine this morning. She says, by the way, just she wrote about some personal things. I ordered a whole bunch of the Andreas seed oils. I love these. Well, we're going to carry them in our at the Heal Pharmacy very soon. Her husband is a acupuncture guy, really cool guy, and they're very well done. I mean, we just love things that are just expertly done and created with so much care and love. And Andreas seed oils are that. There are, if I can remember them, black sesame seed oil, black cumin seed oil. And you can ask Dr. Google, what are the benefits of black seed oils? Check that out someday, and you'll see some of the truly fascinating things that are said, what these guys will do for you. And especially if those of you have got some things going on in your gut, stomach, colon, small intestine, this cumin seed oil, this will kick ulcers and ulcerated things, ulcerated colitis. I'd be on these in a heartbeat if I had that going on, and I would do the sesame and the black cumin seed. There's hemp seed, there's pumpkin seeds, and these are pressed at around 100 degrees, if you can believe it. And just incredible. They've tested them. I think they tested two. One was 0.003 oxidation, 0.003, and the other one was zero oxidation. I think the cumin was zero oxidation. There's probably not an oil on the market that can make those claims. Because if you can press them with this very low temperature, very low friction, and then put them in Myron glass, they're just not going to oxidize. And that's the problem with almost all oils, is they're oxidized. And I think, in my opinion, that's the problem with all the stuff with Ray Pete, PUFAs, and even Adam mentions it. And I disagree with Adam on some of that stuff on the PUFAs, and I love Adam. But I think the PUFAs and all of the data on the PUFAs, which is polyunsaturated fatty acids, they haven't been done with oils like this, so I don't even believe that data, frankly. But I know I believe the data because most people don't, you know, it's solid data, and the yellow fat is solid research that Adam has done, because 99.9999% of the people don't take these kind of oils. This is a very little niche boutique player. So, you know, the poofers are dangerous, but not these poofers, in my opinion. They're different. They're just not. They're different. I'm done. Daniel Vitalis talks about his two premier medicinal mushroom products, Chaga and Reishi.
Because Reishi and Chaga are considered not just adaptogens, but they're also considered immunomodulators, they're safe for daily consumption for a lifetime. There's a lot of herbs, as you know, Patrick, a lot of herbs are not that way. So many medicinal herbs are meant to be used for short periods of time. but there are those few that can be used daily forever, and medicinal mushrooms are that way.
So these would be called a tonic
herbs. Yep, they're essentially tonic, but if we wanted to get even more specific, they're adaptogenic. I feel like we've set a new standard, and it's going to... We raised the bar, but check it out. See where the bar has been risen to.
You can learn more about these great medicinal mushroom products on Daniel's site. Tonic herbs, adaptogens, dual extraction, fruit bodies, and they're tonics and can be used every day. Modulates the immune system. Shaga and Rishi, special Myron Glass from Sir Thrival on OneRadioNetwork.com. We're pretty jazzed around here, Doodle and I. We're going to get our two bottles, one Shaga, one Rishi, today from Sir Thrival, because I haven't taken them for a few months, and so I'm looking forward to it. I love taking those. I got a little feisty there on the Andreas seed oils and didn't even tell you how to get them. Just go to any link there for One World Way, same people, and also I think we do have a specific Andreas seed oil link, and you can try these oils if you like. Okay. Previously on our show, we talked to the now legendary Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt, and he mentioned sulfur. He's a fan.
The conditions in our world and our environment are changing so dramatically that people need to have a whole host of self-help tools and methods. Mm-hmm. And I'm very thrilled about your version of MSM. It's a right way to go. You know, sulfur is part of most of the detox enzymes and the critical part that is right now. We have a much, much higher need of healthy sulfur than we had even 10 years ago. And so I followed your work a little bit, you know, that you're on the right track with what you are promoting.
Well, Dr. Klinghardt, we've heard from thousands of people over the year how they really love this product. You can click and order our Pure Sulfur, three prices, United States, Canada, and worldwide right here, or email me, Patrick, at OneRadioNetwork.com for a discount for more than £4. Pure Sulfur, one of the few places where you can get this product. OneRadioNetwork.com.
To talk to Patrick, call 888-663-6233.
Know the source on One Radio Network.
Sorry, I was trying to do 12 things at once. You know, I'm not even good at doing two things at once, Andrew, but when I do 12, that doesn't work. I don't know what that is. You ever have that experience?
Over-multitasking.
I got over-multitasked, yeah. Okay, Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. You know, there was a curious story. Well, let's do it. This is a good one. Get to more emails, too. I'm going to make sure I get them all here.
We got to talk about jobs.
Yeah, I know. And that's where I was going. I got that's on my list. That's on this one. Okay, great shows. Love the real world of money. I came across this Edison quote.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it would be interesting to hear Andrew's thoughts on it from Dr. Carolyn Borman. If our nation can issue a dollar bond,
it can issue a dollar bill. The thing that makes the bond
the
good.
Element that makes the bond good makes
also
the bill
makes
good.
The bill good.
The difference between the bond and the bill is the bond lets money brokers
benefit, right?
Benefit.
Go ahead. Well, the bill benefits
twice
no
the amount
one.
Of the bond and the additional 20%, whereas the currency pays nobody, but who contributes directly to some useful way. It is absurd to say our country can issue $30 million in bonds and not $30 million
in
currency.
Bills.
Both are promises to pay, but one promises fattens the users, and the other helps the people.
The people, yes.
Oh, Tom, God bless.
He was
on it.
Oh, yeah.
When did he write this?
Oh, goodness, when he was alive, you know, way back.
When was Tom alive?
I guess he's contemporary 18, when was Tom born? He was born in the 1830s.
Yeah. So Tom saw the dollar, he saw the note, and a light bulb went off. Excuse me, I couldn't help myself. A light bulb went off, and he said, whoa.
Yeah.
Man.
There's a better way to do this.
There's a better way to do this. That's a great quote.
Yeah, it is. And it's misattributed to to Edison, Jefferson, but yeah, it was Edison. Where we differ is on the gold standard. So he was what they would call in those days a greenbacker. So the idea that money didn't need substance. In fact, one of his quotes, I think, was paraphrased by Alan Greenspan. Bernard. Goodness gracious, the names, Patrick. Keynes. Keynes called gold a barbarous relic. Mm-hmm. And Edison said gold is a relic of Julius Caesar. So he talked about a monetary system that is debt-based as opposed to gold-based. So he wanted to pump out interest-free currency. He wanted to amend the Federal Reserve Act. And he took his substantial wealth and spent it to study this and issued very prolific papers on the subject and, you know, went through it. He sent letters to hundreds of professors and economists, all of which poo-pooed his entire idea. Mm-hmm. But between him and Henry Ford together, they did everything they can to put an end to this Federal Reserve type system where the power to create money is given to private banks at interest. So yeah, fabulous, fabulous little piece of history. And this was about the time of the Weimar inflation, with the wheelbarrow full of money and to buy a loaf of bread in post-World War I Germany. So I guess it was around 20 to 25 that collapse in the Weimar system eventually occurred in 23. So he, unfortunately, his ideas were discredited. It was kind of like, well, look, if you give this government the power to just create money and they're going to create it willy-nilly and put it into circulation and it's going to be worth nothing. So it's best to have the bankers in charge because they'll regulate how much money is in circulation. So at the time when the Weimar Republic was pumping money into the system, so much so that was the wheelbarrow full of money to buy the loaf of bread, that kind of discredited Edison's ideas.
Yeah, you'd think with what they were saying that Edison and Ford, somebody would have taken pot shots at them, but...
Yeah, right.
But they didn't.
They didn't have to because, again, the activities occurring in the contemporary monetary system, excesses of the Weimar Republic were so well documented that people saw, wow, you know, what was a dollar or a mark 6 months ago is now, you know, a thousandth of a mark 6 months later. So they saw firsthand what happens, and of course the bankers highlighted it. Oh, well, this is what happens when you allow governments to issue money. They'll just keep issuing them until they bust the system. So his ideas were discredited, although I agree with him 100%. There's no reason if Congress can issue a bond, I owe you $1,000, and then hand that bond to the Federal Reserve that then creates $1,000, gives it back to them, puts the $1,000 on their balance sheet. It's real money, right? Because that's the debt of the United States. And they collect interest on it until it's paid back.
Doesn't even make sense.
It's
not even close to making
sense.
That's
absurd. That is what we do.
Not even close to making sense. And then, of course, the presidents that wanted to buck that system are, the history of those guys. They didn't have a good experience with firearms.
No, they didn't.
What was it, McKinley?
They all caught lead poisoning.
Garfield, Jackson, of course.
Dwelly.
Lincoln.
Yeah. Lincoln.
Kennedy, yeah. All of them.
McKinley, Garfield, Kennedy, yeah.
Wow, man.
Abraham.
But they also, a couple other guys, Roosevelt was shot at. Who else?
He probably should have been shot at. No.
Who else? There was a couple other guys that got shot at. It's amazing how many presidents have been shot at over the years. I didn't realize there's that many.
Yeah.
I saw a list there the other night. I go, wow.
Forget Reagan.
Reagan
had that National Commission on Monetary Reform. He's the one that appointed Alan Greenspan to figure out the Social Security mess. And Greenspan suggested that we raise the tax rate because come 2011, that there were going to be more people retired than there were working. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so they boosted taxes by, largest tax increase in history. That was TEFRA, 1986. And boy, did it generate a surplus.
And you're connecting that with Reagan being shot? Maybe?
Man.
You got your tinfoil hat on or what's
I do. Ronald Reagan gave us the first gold coin since 1933.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But no, this was
$5
a this was a Jody Foster, John Hinckley thing, right?
Yeah,
come on.
Okay. All right. It was a brainwashed
assassin.
What
do you think they do? Do you think these are like, what's the famous movie, the Frank Sinatra movie? They're like Manchurian Candidate? That's how they do it?
Yeah, that's the story with Sirhan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
Sirhan. So they mind control and give them drugs and they're just kind of like everyday robots, right?
Go out
and do this.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You think it was that sophisticated back in the Oswald days, or maybe he probably wasn't even in the book depository. Well, no, he was in the book depository, but he probably didn't even take a shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows? Do you think he did take a shot, Oswald?
Who knows?
You don't know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows?
Don't know. Who knows? Yeah, exactly.
Well, what did you want to talk about, jobs? Because that was on my list. I found some interesting things, but maybe you have take them where I wanted to go, or would not want to go.
Or maybe we will, but I would urge you first. You know, our favorite Fred.
Fred, St. Louis.
Fred, St. Louis Fed.
Yeah.
They have a metric, job openings. Total non-farm is the
Let
chart.
Me do that. Total non-farm.
Total non-farm
farm
hires.
Hires, mm-hmm. Fred. Okay. Hires, non-farm, Fred's.
So while you're doing that.
St. Louis Fed, I got it.
Okay, good. So what we've talked about in the past is that there are three main elements to inflation, right? There's the element of first creating the money,
mm-hmm.
the money that the central bank creates and puts into circulation. But the second thing you have to do is get people to spend it, and that's monetary velocity.
And that's at a thud.
Thud, all-time low.
It's thudding at the moment.
Yes.
It's probably $15 trillion.
We'll get back and look at that in a moment. Mm-hmm. But then the third component is resource slack. So if there are plenty of people looking for work and plenty of factories sitting idle, when a proposal to make something is put forward, the prices are going to be at their lowest point. If, in fact, everybody has a job and every factory is working at 100% capacity, and you put forward a new thing you need manufactured, well, the price is going to be very high,
mm-hmm.
because obviously we don't have the capacity or the manpower to do it. Well, the latest job openings labor turnover number, which is known as the JOLT report.
JOLT.
Job openings, labor turnover, JOLT,
mm-hmm.
all-time high, right? What are you looking at on the chart?
I got hires, non-farm.
Yeah, that's the one. Total non-farm hires. Your chart should start, go from negative 2,000 on the left to 1,200 or so on the top. And look at it from 2,000 to present, let's say the last 17 years. Do you have that? Well, if it's not showing you that.
It's not showing me. I got a different chart. It says hires, total, non-farm,
uh-huh.
but it's not at all-time highs.
Yeah, total non-farm, job openings, total non-farm, job openings.
I did job hires.
Job hires, yeah. Job openings.
I got the wrong one. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Total non-farm job openings.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Fred, got it.
Fred. It's at an all-time.
Whoa.
Peak.
Whoa.
Boom. Explosion.
Whoa.
Yes.
So what does that mean?
Donald Trump gets elected. You can see it, right? Boom. Well, the rise kind of started way back in 2010. What it means is that there are more openings, more jobs than there are qualified people to fill it.
Really?
Yes. So industry and business in the United States is already having a problem filling its job openings. So the resource slack that has been absent. So if you look at that chart and you look at 2008 or 2010,
mm-hmm.
where you had,
way down.
Yeah, you had thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, qualified people, ready to work, but no job for them.
So what happened since 2010?
Well, what's happened since 2010 is that newly created money that was put into circulation started to deploy itself, right?
Oh, because that's how Obama doubled the debt.
Correct.
Gotcha.
By just throwing money into circulation. He had a $700 billion TARP. He had a stimulus program, clunkers, cash, all that, you know, nonsense that went on.
Computers for geeks or whatever.
So really built the demand, obviously, and created the money for this activity to occur. So back to the inflation segment. If people see the situation as thus, then they demand higher wages, right? If there's, you know, two jobs for every one you're looking for, then you're going to take the one that pays the most. It's kind of that.
Yeah. So wages should be going up.
Definitely are going up.
Okay.
Wages are definitely.
But they've been flat for a long time.
And they have indeed. And this chart should explain why to you.
I got it. Okay.
Because you had more people than you had jobs. And now you have more jobs than you have qualified people.
Huh.
Right? So now it's simply a retraining problem.
Well, what's all this thing about Mr. Trump and putting Americans back to work?
Well, this, I don't know if you don't see it, but I sure see it. You know, you look at that from a negative number in 2016 to the highest number on record in 2017. I don't know what additional proof you need that there's confidence in the U.S. economy and people are creating jobs.
It is going up from 2016. I got you. Okay.
So the job creation has already started.
Because people are confident they like Donald Trump and what he's talking about. The way he's talking. Okay.
Correct.
And the way he's tweeting.
If you look at, now the next thing would be, of course, factory resource slack. So when you look at the factory or in the manufacturing section in the United States, same thing is occurring, a tightening of slack. So the idea that we have plenty of capacity and suggest something to make and we'll make it, we've kind of lost that idea. We are now at high capacity utilization in the factories, more jobs than people. And of course, the only thing to turn now from confidence is monetary velocity. And monetary velocity has a way of amplifying or multiplying money in circulation. So as we've talked in the past, if you can now look at that not MZM number, which I guess we should look at, money with a zero maturity. Do people have money to spend? That's the question that's answered by money with a zero maturity, or MZM. And so the capacity of people to have money to spend is also at an all-time high. So
but then the velocity is all-time low.
There you go.
So we got velocity down here, way down on the right.
Yep.
And then if we got MZM...
money with a zero maturity.
MZM performance?
That should do it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. MZM performance. No, that doesn't do it. MZM, St. Louis Fed, maybe. Okay, MZM. Money stock? MZM money stock?
Yeah, velocity of M2 money stock, I think, is the,
you want the
official
velocity
title. I'm sorry.
No, I would have got the
we're looking for MZM.
Yeah.
So then that's what you want is MZM.
Yeah, that's going to go, woo. So you start way down here in 1980 with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Way down on the left. You can barely see it.
Yep.
And now go, it's almost like a 45-degree angle.
Yeah, straight down.
Straight up.
Yeah, well, that's the turn that we're waiting for, the turn in monetary velocity. And once that occurs, then the inflation rate will pick up so dramatically that the Fed will have no choice but to get on a concerted interest rate rise cycle.
So what Andrew's talking about here, there's $15 trillion kind of jammed up in the mattresses at Chase Bank, Bank of Dripping Springs. Hot money, right? Could be spent tomorrow if you wanted to.
Yeah, you don't have to sell anything. You don't have to liquidate anything.
$15 trillion. So what you're saying, if something happens and people start to spend this $15 trillion, we could see some inflation that'll knock your socks off.
Yeah, like you've never seen before.
You think?
Because the amplification.
$15 trillion?
It's relative.
Of course, it all wouldn't go at once.
No. but it is relative to the amount of money in circulation. So if there's a lot of money to spend in circulation already, in other words, it doesn't have to be entered into circulation, it's already there.
Which is so what you, this is.
Right, you don't have to wait for that. That's reflected in that money with a zero maturity stock.
So how can we, our listeners, profit from this knowledge?
What, that inflation is coming?
Yeah, how can we profit?
Position yourself in investments that benefit from inflation. And, you know, it's a softball.
Oh, you're not going to be talking about those gold coins again, are you?
No, yep. I won't.
So but I see. Real money is the only thing that works or actually gets more valuable, real things.
As more money into
circulation.
Antiques,
cars, yeah, whatever.
Basquiat paintings, rare pink diamonds, you know.
So is this a good time?
If I'm not going to mention coins and cars and raw land
but don't mention
and
coins.
Trees.
But don't mention coins.
I won't mention coins. But
don't mention coins.
You know, things that are physical, tangible, and fixed supply.
What about, would this be a good time to start your own business?
Yeah, it'd be a great time to start.
Because if the money starts coming, they're going to be buying stuff,
right? Oh, yeah, people will be spending it. And they'll spend it on crazy things. They'll spend it on anything. You can...
Really?
My goodness, people opening a cupcake shop in Brooklyn is lying around the block. You remember those Cronuts? Mm-hmm. There's another one. You know, if you have something that consumer would like, they're probably going to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is going to be the impetus for people to make that turn, this chart to start going down? What do you think's got to happen?
Rising prices.
Yeah, but no, that's what causes the rising prices.
And yeah.
You're wagging the dog here on me.
The
Don't
rising
do that.
Prices are what fuels the behavior change.
But the behavior change causes the prices to rise.
And they cause them to rise further.
What would cause rising prices if people aren't going to spend the money?
The higher input cost. We just went over that. You gotta pay the employees more to get them to take the job.
Okay,
you gotta pay more.
I forgot about that point. Yeah. Okay, so you got all these people that need workers.
Correct.
The workers aren't there.
Correct.
They gotta pay them more to make a burger or whatever.
That's right, whatever.
And then they raise the prices.
Yes.
To pay for this.
To pay for everything.
So this is gonna cause prices to rise. And then when prices start to rise, people say, George, let's get that computer because prices are going up. Let's get it today.
Well, housing prices are a big driver as well.
And housing prices are a typical thing of this.
Typical driver.
Typical, right?
Yeah.
And they are going up.
You're
going to
get a new house, got to put in new carpet. You need new drapes and might as well get some new appliances. And
boy, housing prices are going up. Do you see what's Vancouver? I mean, you got to mention, this is just the dumbest thing I've ever seen. This was the biggest housing bubble in the world ever.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's just going. It's.
We'll just make it bigger.
It's just going to be bigger.
Add more skin.
They're just.
The bubble doesn't have.
What
to
is
burst.
With Vancouver? What are they smoking?
Well, there's a lot of financial activity there. There's a lot of foreign expatriated capital there, and they all still want houses. And you know, it's like, well, if a house in Vancouver is worth this much, then how much is a house in the rest of Canada worth?
Is that a nice place to live, Vancouver? I've never been there.
I would say it's as nice as any Pacific Northwest place to live.
But Canada's a little weird, though. They're Utah.
I know. You know what I mean?
They're stranger than strange. No, I mean, some of the politics up there is like really bonkers, you know.
Yeah. No. So on our monetary MZM velocity chart, we see that, you know, starting in 1980 when monetary velocity was like 3.5 times.
Like nothing.
Turnover 3.5 times every. So if you follow your chart over to, like, I don't know, let's say Donald Trump's election, you find that fourth quarter of 2016 was kind of the bottoming of it.
Of the velocity?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, velocity. Oh, I'm back. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And you know, we saw that it was a 1.267 figure, and then it became a 1.289.
Oh, I see it right here.
And now I believe that next figure print, it'll be a 1.3. And from there, you'll see monetary velocity start to increase as the dollars start to turn over faster and the inflation will be ignited. And make no question about it, because now we've added all four components. And when you go back to the financial crisis of 2008, you remember people were scrambling around telling us that because of the TARP program, because of the stimulus program, because of the expansion of the Fed's balance sheet from $1 to $4 trillion, we were going to have inflation. And I believe that's about the first time I started to explain these major components of inflation, right? It's not just an increase in the money supply. You also need capacity. You need resource slack. You need unemployment slack. You need monetary velocity. Without all four of the components together, you're not going to get inflation. And that's exactly what we didn't get. We have mild inflation, manageable inflation, not hyperinflation, not even massive inflation, as I talked about. That's coming now.
Does President Trump want inflation?
Yeah, inflation.
Because that'll mean things are happening.
The weaker dollar, let's call it what it is, a devaluation of the currency.
Yeah. He's been talking about that, and him and Mnuchin have.
And we've been tracking it through this U.S. dollar index. And remember, this is relative to other currencies, not relative to gold. Where are we in gold and silver? Are we broaching that $1,300 mark in gold after being down to 1180, 1160. I don't even know where it went on the last bottom. But that bottom, 10 years ago would have been, 1160 gold. That'd be great. It is. The previous bottom is nowhere near the current bottom. And the previous peak, that's probably about where the current bottom is. So what's going to happen next time? I think we're going to break a new peak in gold, which means we have to break 1900. I think, might as well print it because it is June, right? I think by the end of the year, we'll be broaching $1,500 gold. So the infection in the world's, big picture, you have short-term debt, people working out their problems, rolling over debt and so forth. And risk is just totally mispriced in the marketplace. If you step back and look at debt and pensions and healthcare entitlements and social programs long-term, man, they're so bad that even the people that say they're bad can't believe how bad they are. Productivity growth, what have we had there besides none? We are not getting any more productive.
Besides none.
Automation notwithstanding. So as we introduce more robots into the Tesla factories and so forth, we'll become more productive. And then, in the United States, our citizens typically are broke. I get that money with a zero maturity is as high as it's been. But by and large, that division between the haves and the have-nots has just gotten wider. And the middle has been squeezed out in the interim. Will President Trump get tax reform by August and give us those three tax brackets and the massive corporate tax cut? I don't think so.
Well, if he blows through this Russian thing, which I think is going to be over after tomorrow.
I agree. After
Comey testifies, then maybe he can really, get out and take this thing for a spin and see if it'll do something,
Well, I hope so.
It'd be great to get a little tax reform. Man, we could use some.
Yeah, but don't forget these guys are heading for recess, Patrick.
Yeah, can't he just make them stay here?
Man. Well, will he make them stay here?
Can the president make them stay?
I think the deal is...
They make them stay.
I think the deal is if they can get deregulation into the banks, so the banks are now free to invest their depositors' money into more risky things,
More risky than they are now?
Yes.
Jeez.
Well, then that will be very stimulative for the summer. Yeah. It'll be very stimulative for the summer. You'll have a merger and acquisitions bonanza.
Hmm. Is there a law, or did I dream this, that at some point it was actually, or it is today, illegal to lend depositors' money to other people?
Well, yeah, because...
Is that still true today?
Yeah, essentially to exceed your balance sheet.
What do you mean? So it's not illegal to lend George's money, my neighbor's money, to me if he...
As long as George knows, yeah.
Mm-hmm. George doesn't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the division between the investment bank and the commercial bank.
Okay, but so... Wait a minute. What I'm saying is... Let me ask it this way. If somebody's got $20,000 in a Wells Fargo bank account, does Wells Fargo doesn't use that money?
No.
Of course, because they create the money when you create the loan.
That's right. Okay. That's on their balance sheet as a liability.
Is it against the law to use that $20,000? Why would they if they can create it?
Right. It's against banking regulations to to do that, but not against the law.
It's against banking regulations to use the $20,000 from your neighbor to loan to Patrick for his home.
That's right. That's got to be put on the books as a liability. You owe the neighbor that much.
Really?
Yes. And now Patrick's
loan... So if
anybody
doesn't think you don't create the money when you create the loan or the credit card.
Right.
You know, they're not looking.
Paying attention.
They're not paying attention.
Yeah, because that loan in many instances is immediately available for discount. So it can be put into the marketplace and sold. It doesn't have to be held by the entity.
Right. So your mortgage, they can just sell it to somebody.
That's right. And the neighbor's money, that's still on the liability side of the balance sheet. That hasn't moved. It's still there. The problem occurred when the merger of the investment bank and commercial banks, the way Glass-Steagall intended it to be, if you deposit money in your checking account, you're counting on, like a credit union, your bank, in the commercial sense, gathers deposits and makes loans to the same pool. In an investment bank, people are putting money into the bank with the whole intent of making money. So they accept risk there. When a guy puts money in his checking account to pay the rent, he's not accepting any risk. He might not even be getting any interest. So he's not accepting any risk at all for the money that he's putting in.
Uh-huh.
That's the theory of separating commercial banks and investment banks. Because once you allow commercial banks to make these types of risky endeavors, then they're putting their clients into risk that is mispriced. And that's what I've said before. That was like number two on my list, right? The mispricing of assets. And people put their money in the system at 1.5%, 2%, and never calculating enough return for the risk. But yet, from the perspective of the banking system, they're taking this risk. So if you have an interest-bearing checking account and you have money in it, you're accepting a loss of principal as a risk. And that's unfortunate because that's not what people think when they put their money in the bank.
Let's see. What if somebody like Illinois would say, you know, we're over, we're just going to do bankruptcy, because it's probably where they're going to end up.
We can't pay.
We just can't pay. So could the president or the Fed, or what would it take for them just to get bailed out, which is what they would do, right?
Yeah, a bailout.
Somebody's going to bail them out.
Yeah. A bailout bill by Congress, otherwise known as TARP, and they'll keep voting on it until they get it right.
Yeah.
Or a direct cash infusion by the Federal Reserve in the form of, you give us that bad bond, because that's what will happen with Illinois bonds. Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll just buy them. Boy, that's going to be fun to watch President Trump when this all goes on. He's gonna be having kittens in the West Wing.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to be happy with this at all.
Yeah, he's got a lot of fish to fry, that's for sure.
Oh, I tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you
what. Yeah, he doesn't get that first one done, that corporate tax cut to 15%.
Yeah.
Man, then the first leg of the stool that's going to hold this thing up is falling.
So. Yeah, yeah. And boy, there's a lot of pressure, of course, from, you know, of course, all Republicans and Democrats, because, you know.
They're ready to go on summer recess, man. They
and plus,
have time
you know,
for
they
this.
Don't like him anyway. They want him out, so. Yeah, I hear this just in. This might be something similar to what we're talking about, if I can find it here. Here's a short clip of the director of the National Security Agency. His name is Dan Coats, National Intelligence Agency. Dan Coats, and here's what he said.
My time of service, which is interacting with the President of the United States or anybody in his administration, I have never been pressured. I have never felt pressure to intervene or interfere in any way and shaping intelligence in a political way or in relationship
all
to
I,
an ongoing investigation.
All I'd say.
So right away, the Democrat questioning him is just butts in there. Boy, I can't hear any more of this.
Yeah.
Do you hear him?
Tell me something else,
you know. Yeah, well, maybe the whole left media thing is going to fall apart here in the next few days. That would be great. Let the president get on to doing something.
On this Comey story.
You think?
What Comey says and what he said and what he said. Now I want to hear what he said. I want to hear it. and he better say it again. Or that makes the New York Times the lying rag that they are.
Let's see.
Never mind fake news. It's like lying news.
And then in rebut, Senator Mark Warner. Let's see what he's got. Whoops.
Investigation or to directly intervene with direct.
Hold on a second. Mark Warner.
Downplay the Russia investigation or to directly intervene with Director Comey. Can you set the record straight about what happened or didn't happen?
Well, Senator, as I responded to a similar question during my confirmation and in a second hearing before the committee, I do not feel it's appropriate for me to, in a public session in which confidential
This was earlier. This was earlier. So the one I played before is the one today. So I don't want to confuse people. Okay, well, we'll find out more tomorrow, and you two can go to, I'm sure they're going to have Comey parties around the country, people.
Well, but there is a lot of coverage right now of, with President Trump considering reversing the Cuba deal, right? Putting limits back on travel and commerce.
I didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, there was a story in New York Times last month about this very thing, you know, how bad a thing it's going to be. But they couldn't help themselves. They had to talk about what a great deal the former president made in making this opening with Cuba. But now remember, we had total embargo on Cuba. But yet somehow, the president and his top aides opened a secret channel to the Cubans and started to have policy conversations, much the same way as they did with the Iranians. Now, talk about talking to our enemies. They want to accuse Mr. Trump of communicating or conspiring with Russia, and they certainly have to look at Mr. Obama's treatment of Cuba and his back-channel contacts with Havana. I thought this was all within the purview of the president, and the idea that just because he talks or communicates to a foreign power that might not be our friend, that doesn't make him a traitor or make him guilty of treason.
What makes it Russia our enemy?
Yeah.
I've never gotten
they're
that.
Not on the same list that Cuba was, or Iran, or Syria, or North Korea. But yet, you know, this idea that they're not our friend, they're our enemy. And so for him to even talk to him, or for Jared Kushner to talk to the Russians, I mean, what the heck is wrong?
Wow.
With opening a channel of communication.
This Russian thing, as you know, has been going on for
bogus
for 60 years, 70 years. And then if you entangle that with the brand terrorism and you got Russia, I mean, that's good for $1 trillion a year just off the top.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
True.
Russia, terrorism, oh, that'll be $1 trillion. We can
easily spend $1 trillion.
Yeah, we can soak up $1 trillion on those two guys, whatever they are. This is so obvious to me.
More payroll, more hardware.
Yeah, whatever. You get Russia because then you need the big ones, right? And then you get the terrorism because then you need the little guns. It's pretty simple to me. I don't know. I think I should be on the board of directors.
Yeah. board of directors of the Boys, Inc.
Boys, Inc. I don't think they'll let me in. Mike from Colorado writes, on previous shows, Angie said the interest rates will be in double digits again. Can he explain how it could unfold and how long would that take?
Yeah, I think we just did that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I think, Mike, he laid out how this is going to start someday. We don't know when, really, do we?
Very soon.
Really?
Yeah. You know, this June meeting, second rate hike, I think, is pretty much in the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And people will look at it and say, what on earth? This doesn't make sense. But the people at the Fed know what we're talking about here. They understand the dangers that the components of inflation are all in place. The only thing it's going to take is a turn in confidence. Now, if they can convince Americans to keep saving their money for a rainy day and don't spend a dollar, to the extent that they're able to do that, that might keep inflation in check a little bit. But in harsh reality, we're heading for an inflationary surge, the likes of which we haven't seen in a long time. And I anticipate that it'll be done within Donald Trump's first term.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be facing re-election with those double-digit interest rates we spoke about.
if someone anonymously released real viable plans on the internet that everyone could use to easily produce their own very low cost or free energy systems from basic materials, how would that affect the global economy, right, Steve?
I don't accept the premise. There's no free energy. You know, that's a violation of the laws of physics. Low-cost energy, well, that's around here and there, depending on your locale, mm-hmm. between wind and the other components. However, the sunken cost to get involved in all of these, subsidies notwithstanding, like, you know, if you can buy a 300-watt solar panel for $100, then maybe it starts to make sense. So as these economies start to reveal themselves, a wind turbine and solar power and so forth, input costs would fall. So if businesses and individuals can produce electricity and then keep the distribution local, you know, within their own property, that would greatly reduce the amount of consumption cost. What, you know, what percentage of your income is devoted to energy expenditures? And in fact, the lower we make that energy, kind of like if you build it, they will come, the more we start to electrify things, where we, you know, before we're using natural gas, which is also getting cheap. So the premise of free energy is gone, but the era of cheap energy, I think, is right in front of us. And given the input costs that are currently devoted to energy, you'll see a lot more usage. Remember, all these robots that, you know, we currently are, the robots currently operate on, you know, bread and coffee. The new ones run on electricity, and they don't have pensions. So the cheap energy, low-cost energy will fuel expansion and increase in productivity, which also fuels inflation.
The American Enterprise Institute did a study. I don't know how ethical they are, but let's assume for the moment these are real numbers. And believe me, I'm a proponent of solar. I have panels on my roof I put on, 20 years ago. But having said that, here's what they say, that $398,000 natural gas workers equals 33% of all the electricity generated in the United States. Okay? 160,000 coal employees do 30%. 100,000 wind employees do 5%. And 374,000 solar workers do 0.9%.
Yep.
Is that possible?
Absolutely.
Is it possible that there's 375,000 people even working in the solar industry?
Everything from building them to installing them.
You think? Know, really?
They don't just jump on
your
house.
But it's only 9%.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dismal at best.
Yeah.
Did they do nuclear?
I'm sorry? They didn't do nuclear on it. Well, I wonder why they didn't.
Well, because it's probably so low that we would stop everything and do just that.
Oh, you mean the number is, it's such a good thing as far as the numbers.
That's right.
Yeah, because you just need about 12 guys and a big nuclear
thing, right?
Walking around drinking coffee.
Yeah.
Do your thing. Wow. Oh. Mm-hmm. So it's, but people are just, they don't want it, right? People don't want it. They don't want it. Yeah. So no, I don't want that stuff. And I don't blame them. I don't think I'd want one in my backyard either.
Yeah.
Let's see. Do we have, I think we had one other one. Fitting one to end on. Christopher, Trump mentioned this approaching crisis on the campaign trail. Capital flows are coming to use. This is a time to use this money to lend for infrastructure before collapse happens. We are in the sovereign debt crisis as spoke about in the Hoover Papers. If you type in pension funds in Google, you find problems in Dallas, California, Illinois. Yeah, we've talked about it.
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
When the stock market hits about 23,000, then retail, average jobs, average Joe will jump in. Oh, my God.
He's right. He's
are they so really?
Right. Just like Bitcoin. You know?
Are they going to jump in when it gets to be 23,000?
Yeah, they don't want to miss it because it's been going. It's been going.
No.
They don't want to miss it.
It really will rise due to people's losing faith in government, and lending will dry up for real estate. This is from Christopher. What do you think about Christopher's premises here?
I think they're pretty good.
I think they're pretty close, huh?
Yeah, but the money has to go somewhere. See, this is the thing. It doesn't get destroyed. It doesn't disappear. And I believe it will seek out tangible assets and drive up their price.
Well, the money does. Oh, yeah, but they could just keep the money in the bank and keep the MGM thing up, right? Why does it have to go somewhere?
Inflation changes human behavior. And they see their money sitting in their account, losing purchasing power, losing value. Yeah.
And prices going up.
And then prices going up, they convert it into, heck, roofing shingles, anything.
Buy something.
Something.
Yeah, yeah. I remember those days in the 70s, remember?
That's right.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Well, this was fun. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for everything. We appreciate
sure, you
being here.
Yep.
What's on tap for you guys up there in Hawthorne, New Jersey?
Work, man. We have a lot of work to do. Running out of time to do it in, so all hands on deck. We're working our butts off.
Like doing what?
Sorting coins, pricing coins, selling coins, buying coins.
That's what you do for a living, right?
What's it?
Sorting, buying. It's like I do laundry, you do coins.
Yeah, I can't make them. Well, I have to get them somewhere. I got to get them somewhere, so that's what I do.
Yeah. Well, if you got into Federal Reserve notes, you could make them. But then that would be no fun. Because, I mean, a lot of people are doing that.
And they all look the same.
Yeah. Got those pictures on it. All right, kiddo, thanks a lot. What's your number up there?
800-468-2646.
800-468-2646. Thanks, Andrew.
Patrick
Timpone and the Real World of Money. We're going to talk with a heart surgeon tomorrow. And also, lost it, but it's there. Just circling the runway in my mind, and just don't have time to let it land. We'll be here, 9 o'clock. Thanks to Lynn. Thanks to Sharon. Thank you for your ongoing support of all of our fine products. We sure appreciate it. We'll see you in the morning at 9 o'clock.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.